At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. So the latest GDP report is out. Slower growth, higher inflation equals stagflation. It's the worst of all worlds. Stocks dropped nearly 400 points. We're going to tackle all this and more. We've got Steve Moore and Mike Falkender. And then can President Trump stay on message if he's in court every day? Sure looks like it. But the great Kellyanne Conway is going to tell us. She'll be here on set. And then do presidents have absolute immunity from the Supreme Court hearing this morning? Greg Jarrett and Pam Bondi will weigh in. The markets did not like today's GDP report, and our own Jerry Willis is standing by with some more. Jerry, not so good, eh?
Not so good, Larry. That's right. Well, look, if you want to know where market rates are going, interest rates, they're not going to get cut anytime soon after today. But let's start with those numbers from GDP, right? As we take a look at this, the answer to your question is yes, the market has realized rates may not come down soon, but let's start with today's close. Stocks down, but not at the lows of their day. The Dow down 375 points. At its worst, it was down 700 points. The S&P closing down 23. The NASDAQ down 100. Look, the sell-off started with the release of the first quarter GDP, as Larry said, which came in well below consensus estimates of 2.4% at 1.6%. Worse, inflation was hotter than expected, with consumer prices increasing at a 3.4% pace. That's well above previous quarter's 1.8% advance. All in, growth shrunk and prices are high, a classic definition of stagflation the traders say has them concerned. Meanwhile, chances of a rate cut in July are down to 25%. In June, well, forget about it, as they say. Adding to the worries, Meta plunged 11% after the social media giant issued light revenue guidance. That's the stock's biggest decline since October 2022. Upcoming tech reports from Alphabet and Microsoft will be looked at with a fine-tooth comb tonight and tomorrow morning. As one trader said to us, Larry, Friday fears will creep in. That doesn't sound good.
Creep, creep. That's all I'll say. Jerry Willis, thanks, as always. Now, folks, the riff tonight. Joe Biden's economy going from bad to worse. It's not just high inflation and falling worker wages. Now we've got higher inflation and lower growth. And that will drive wages down as well. And it's called stagflation. The GDP report came in 1.6% for the first quarter, way down from the temporary growth spurt in last year's second half. Meanwhile, the core inflation rate in the first quarter jumped to 3.7% at an annual rate, way above the Fed's 2% target. Now, inside the report, consumer spending slowed, capital investment slowed, inventories slumped, the trade deficit widened. So, what is Joe Biden's answer on the campaign trail? Spend more, tax more, regulate more. And that is a perfect policy storm for continued stagflation, meaning even weaker growth and higher inflation. Joe Biden's crowing over his intention to let all the successful Trump tax cuts expire. As is always the case with President Biden, his economic statements are completely counterfactual. Now, I've gone over this ground so many times, but distinguished economist Larry Lindsay is writing that people making less than $200,000 had an average tax cut of 5.5% under Trump. Now, that's a bigger number than the 3.9% tax cut for those making over $200,000. Real weekly earnings during the Trump years rose 7.7% from the end of 2016 to the end of 2020. Now, these are average families. These are typical working folks. They are not rich people. And they enjoyed a virtual boom under Mr. Donald Trump. Meanwhile, under Biden, Real wages have dropped 2.9%. So let me get this right. Typical families saw their income up 7.7 under Trump, but fall 2.9 under Biden. That is a 10.5% swing against Biden. And that explains so much of why economic confidence in Trump typically runs 25 percentage points or more compared to Biden. Meanwhile, the key measure of inequality, now stay with me on this, it's called the Gini coefficient. That's most widely used for inequality. It declined significantly under Trump. He was the first president in four decades to leave office with a lower Gini than when he entered. That means inequality fell during the Trump years. That is part and parcel why middle and lower income people had the biggest gains from the Trump tax cut, no matter what Joe Biden untruths he may be spewing on the campaign trail. Meanwhile, Biden has increased regulatory costs by $1.4 trillion, which is strangling small business. And by the way, it's killing electricity and other sources of power necessary to underpin economic growth. Plus, Biden continues to spend his keister off. And Democratic economist Jason Furman, an honest man, has pointed out that the $500 billion or more cost of Joe Biden's plans to cancel student loans will increase inflation and increase interest rates. That includes increasing higher mortgage rates as well. Basically, Bidenomics is trying to temporarily boost consumer demand while strangling the business supply of goods and services. That is a stagflation scenario or worse. Mr. Biden says he'll permanently expire the Trump tax cuts, but voters are suggesting they will permanently retire Biden. Expire and retire. I have to think about that. Joining me now, Steve Moore, Committee to Unleash Prosperity Hotline, host of More Money on WABC Radio, and Michael Falkender, former Assistant Treasury Secretary for Economic Policy and Chief Economist at AFPI. Gentlemen, welcome. Michael Falkender, this was, I guess, unexpectedly poor report, much lower growth. I mean, Atlanta Fed GDP tracker was 2.9. The actual number came in at 1.6. And the inflation numbers came much higher than expected. You got a 3.7% core PCE deflator. It's the worst of both worlds, Falkender. What's going on here?
Yeah, it really is. But as you said, Larry, this is Bidenomics in action. When you take money, borrow money from abroad, send it out to consumers and tell them to go spend the money. First of all, what we saw is that a lot of it was spent on imported goods. So that's where the some of the shock in the report came from, is that the imports number rose so much. But second is that they keep undermining the ability of producers to generate things here domestically. And as you said, last week alone, we got another $750 billion of regulation coming out of this administration. That hasn't even hit the GDP reports yet. So this is very much a sign of things to come under Joe Biden when you have government telling businesses not to create things because of all of the regulation coming out of Washington, with all of then the borrowed money driving up demand.
You know, Steve Moore, I may have lost half my viewership talking about the Gini coefficient. But I'm defining it. It is the best, most standard measure of inequality. And this is the important point I'm trying to make. Biden says the Trump tax cuts are only good for rich people. That is completely untrue. Middle-income workers had the biggest gain. That we've chronicled that before. Larry Lindsay wrote about it. But this Gini coefficient shows that inequality fell under Trump. Let me repeat that. Inequality fell under Trump. It's the first time, what did Lindsay say, in 40 years that such a thing has happened. And Joe Biden doesn't understand it. And in fact, those folks, those working folks, those non-rich folks benefited under Trump and they yearn for the Trump days. That's all I'm saying. Gini coefficient means inequality. It fell under Trump. It has been rising under Biden.
Yeah, exactly the opposite of what Joe Biden says. He keeps talking about a middle-out expansion. No, this has been a middle squeeze we've seen. The number I like to use on your show, because it's true and it comes from the Census Bureau, is a real $6,000 per household increase in income under Trump. That's a giant number, $6,000 of additional purchasing power. It's down by about $2,000 under Biden. I agree with Michael. I mean, why would we expect growth? I'm surprised we're even getting 1.6, frankly. I mean, where's the growth going to come from when you got higher taxes? Michael is right. You know, now the burden of regulations each year is about $3 trillion on top of, you know, $5, $6 trillion of taxes. And you've got all of these anti-business regs coming out one after another after another. We can't even keep track of them. They're coming up so rapidly. So one other point, Larry, when you have inflation that's running at, what was the number, about 3.6, 3.7%. We had nominal growth of GDP at above 5%. The problem is inflation is eating almost all of that growth because prices are rising so fast.
Well, the inflation fires are still very hot. That's the point. The Fed wants 2%, and we're moving the wrong way. We saw this in the CPI for January, February, and March. Mike Falkinger, the average CPI for the first 3 months of the year was 4.5% at an annual rate. So lo and behold, the so-called PCE deflator, the core deflator, is up 3.7, a little less, which is what generally happens. But it's going the wrong way. The Fed wants 2, and we're heading towards 4. Or worse, and the policies are going to stimulate demand. You know Jason Furman, Mike Falkinder. I know Jason Furman very well. Honest guy, Clinton economist, Obama economist. He was out, I think he said, on CNBC or some station. He said that if you cancel all these student loans, the point is it's going to boost consumer demand, which is going to cause higher inflation, higher interest rates, and higher mortgage rates. A thought on that, Mr. Falkinder?
Yeah, I mean, what Jason Furman is doing is demonstrating that there's still a part of the Democratic Party that hasn't bought into this far-left approach towards government and wants to have credibility after Joe Biden has shown the exit. Because he and Larry Summers have been out there the entire time saying, if you throw this much money into the economy, you are going to get an inflation. And Larry, let's remember, I've mentioned this before, but Larry Summers came out recently and said, if you include mortgage interest payments and car loan payments, that the inflation rate under Joe Biden wouldn't have peaked at 9, it peaked at 18. Mm. And so if you go to the traditional way, the way that we measured inflation back in the 70s, and you include those numbers, and therefore really identify the impact on household budgets, inflation has been far worse than the official statistics would have you believe. And that's why Joe Biden's so far underwater. And you've got a couple left-wing Democrat economists who want to still be believed sometime in the future and are actually calling out his party.
Well, by the way, Jason Furman will be on the show tomorrow, so haven't seen him in a while. Good for him. Steve Moore, how about this regulatory story? There's two things I want to explore. One of them is new regs from Biden will basically attempt, it'll all be challenged in the courts, but it'll be attempting to end coal, to end new natural gas, end coal, end new natural gas plants. They've already ruled out new LNG plants. So, Steve, just on that narrow regulatory slice, there's others. I know there's over $1 trillion in total cost. Who's going to power the economy? You know, you have to have electricity. Now, wind and solar is a tiny portion of our total electricity. If you take out natural gas and you take out LNG and you take out coal, I'm not sure what is left besides the windmills in the year 1200 AD in Holland, which we had on the screen a couple of nights ago. What's left besides all these Dutch windmills?
Yeah, not much. By the way, I want to say one last thing about this inflation story because it's important. Larry, do you know the last incumbent president who ran for re-election with an inflation rate this high? Jimmy Carter.
Yeah,
Jimmy Carter
say.
Against your guy Reagan.
That's too easy.
Hate
that's
inflation.
That's way too easy.
What?
I thought you were going to ask me a hard question. That's way too easy, Jimmy Carter. Blame Carter.
Well, my point is,
talk about the power. I'm interested in this power
story.
You can't close down power and have a strong economy. I mean, you just can't.
Right.
And the Bidens think you can. And I don't understand this.
We get 80% of our energy today from old-fashioned wind, coal. Oil, gas, and coal. You know, the fossil fuels. The regulation. I want to make sure your viewers understand this. Biden is putting out a regulation that says all freight that's transported across America, tens of billions of dollars of freight every single day, has to be on a carbon-free form of transportation. That includes our rail, our trucks, and our ships. Now, what are you going to do? Are we going to use sailboats to get our stuff across the country? Can you imagine this, Larry? You've got a 10-ton truck that's carrying a huge cargo, right? And they have to go across the country. You're going to do that with a battery? The batteries don't even exist. I mean, this is nonsense. It's almost like as if they're intentionally trying to destroy our economy. You destroy a country's energy supply, and its economy will not function.
Mike Faulkner, that's not the only regulatory issue. And so let's go back to American Action, whatever it's, you know, Doug Holtz-Eakin's think tank, American Action Forum. So Joe Biden's final rule costs are $1.37 trillion. $1.37 trillion. Barack Obama's much more frugal, $303.1 billion. That's still a big number until Biden came along. Donald Trump, $30.1 billion. All right, Trump, $30 billion. Obama, $300 billion. And Biden, $1.4 trillion. What does that tell you? That's a disregard for free market capitalism. That is an emphasis on what Newt calls big government socialism, top-down, regulatory state, jamming stuff down our throats that we don't want. That's all that is. And you know what? That's why his economic polls are so terrible. People know all about this. They want to buy a gasoline-powered car. They want to buy, you want to buy an EV, fine, buy an EV, but don't tell me I have to in the next 5 years, and don't tell me you're going to spend trillions of dollars subsidizing student loan cancellations. I mean, really? People aren't, you know what, Faulkner, just this great thought just occurred to me. People are smart, not stupid. The trouble with the Bidens is they think the average voter is stupid, not smart. Right. How about that?
Yeah, and Larry, the thing is that these are numbers coming straight from the administration. So this is what the Biden administration is telling you is the economic impact. Do you think that that is going to understate or overstate the true number? Right? The true number is going to be significantly higher than that. And so, and the Trump number actually was negative if you were to do a lot of the analysis the right way. Because if you count all the deregulatory activity we did, we actually took regulatory costs off of the American economy. So the contrast between the two visions could not be more stark. And Larry, let me mention one other thing, which is they are in regulatory overdrive right now because we're approaching what's called the CRA deadline, right? So if they don't get these rules done and Trump wins again and the Republicans have both the House and the Senate, we can use the Congressional Review Act to undo things that are done with so many legislative days to go. They're trying to cram everything in now. Yeah. So these numbers are not final. We've got a few biggies still to go,
but I'm
so
crushed
that they can get under the deadline.
I'm crushed you didn't comment on the brilliance of my insight that ordinary people are smart. They're smart. That's the basis. That's the essence of free markets. They know how to act in their own self-interest. And the Bidens don't believe that. The Bidens think only pro-Hamas Ivy League graduates are smart. Okay? I got to get out of here. I'm getting into a lot of trouble.
They want to now, what happened this morning, the FCC announced new regulations on the internet, for goodness sake.
I know. We got Ajit Pai coming on to take care of that. Gentlemen, thank you.
Good.
I just think it was a great insight on my part. Steve Moore and Michael Faulkner, people are smart. That's the essence of free market capitalism. Meanwhile, Kellyanne Conway is coming on. She's going to coach me on just how smart people are because they seem to understand Donald Trump's message. Even if you tie him up in court, he's still out there. By the way, he's going to carry New York State. Somebody's got to find that poll. Trump has closed the gap in New York State against Biden. It's a hilarious story. Kellyanne Conway next up. I'm still Kudlow. People are smart. Ha!
The Windy City. the city of big shoulders. Ah, there are lots of nicknames for Chi-Town, but a pair of ambitious architects got tired of hearing it called the second city. So they set out to build the world's tallest skyscraper for the world's largest store.
Fazlur Khan and Bruce Graham's bundled tube design for the Sears Tower was poised to climb a record-setting 1,450 feet above the Chicago River. But first, they had to get it off the ground floor, and Quincy Street in downtown Chicago ran straight through their proposed design.
They had to buy a street from the city of Chicago. Just think of how hard it is to buy a street. But, you know, with great lawyers and $2.7 million later, they were able to purchase that street and start, you know, planning and constructing.
The height of the Sears Tower was just one innovation. The unprecedented project also required a new way to think about construction. Khan and Graham hired an entire outside firm, Morse Diesel, just to manage the construction.
Construction management at the time was a fairly new field, and I think that's because the cost of construction had gotten so high, you really couldn't afford to go over.
Morse Diesel's first big test came with the foundation. The Sears Tower would essentially be nine buildings bundled together, and each one required its own concrete caisson to distribute the load.
One way to think about these is actually to think about them as the building's fingers sticking into the mud down to where they can really sit on the rock.
But nine caissons would require more than 2 million cubic feet of concrete, and getting that through the streets of Chicago would be impossible.
Rather than bringing concrete trucks for weeks and months through the city of Chicago, they chose to build a batch plant in the basement so that they could mix all of that concrete on site.
The on-site batch plant saved time, hassle, and money. But not everything could be assembled on the crowded downtown job site.
One of the innovations that really helped with the management of the construction of Sears Tower was the use of prefabrication.
The tower's steel frame would be a patchwork of prefabricated T-shaped modules, nicknamed Christmas trees. These giant T's would be welded together like puzzle pieces.
These were portions of beams that were welded to the columns off-site, and they could just be stacked into place and bolted together.
But each T was 25 feet high and 15 feet wide. Trucking them into the site would be a trick.
Chicago was densely settled, was densely built up at this time. So getting anything into the site was certainly a challenge.
They had to angle the Christmas trees at 45 degrees so they could just slip under the streetlights. The crews bolted the prefabricated T's into place at astonishing speed. Almost overnight, the most unusual skeleton rose above the city.
And through that process, they were able to build eight stories per month.
Hello to our viewers in Argentina watching on Clarín. Thanks for choosing Fox. For the very latest from our correspondents, check out foxbusiness.com or foxnews.com. Keep it right here.
Wherever you are, whenever you want it, Fox News Digital is the world according to Fox. The top headlines other sites won't touch. Unmatched coverage you won't get anywhere else. And the stories that keep America clicking. No one does it like foxnews.com. Plus, download the Fox News app to get breaking news, alerts, and all your favorite shows on the go. And if you can't watch, listen.
The Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast.
I'm Brett Baer.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Fox News Digital, the world according to Fox.
So can President Trump stay on message while he's in court every day? Well, joining us now to tell us all about it, Kellyanne Conway, former counselor to President Trump and Fox News contributor. Kellyanne, love, welcome, welcome, welcome. Besides going to the bodega in Harlem, I guess this morning he went to this construction site on the Midtown, 48th and Park. And we have a poll. I don't know whether the poll's any. But he's narrowed the gap in New York to only 10 points. 4 years ago, it was 23 points. So what's going on here?
What's going on is that Trump is actually expanding his coalition. His core constituency just looks and feels and is different. It's larger, but it's more diverse than it's been in the past, 2016 or 2020. Larry, why? Because it includes even more union households than in 2016, when that helped us win in places like Michigan and Pennsylvania, Ohio. It includes more Hispanics and African Americans. It includes more women. People say, oh, he's not going to win women. Excuse me, he beat the queen bee herself, the would-be first female president of the United States, while a majority of the voters were female. We've been a majority of the electorate since 1964.
That's right.
And so even if he gets 4% more, 3% more, that New York Times Siena poll that shows Biden leading Trump in New York by 10 points, whereas Biden won New York by 23 last time, if it's half right, Biden's in trouble. But see what Trump's doing? He's doing something Joe Biden can't do. Joe Biden can't command a crowd. He can't. It's just low energy, no excitement whenever he shows up somewhere. And what's ironic is this is the way the Democrats, like Barack Obama, particularly Bill Clinton, even Jimmy Carter at the time, all over Iowa, would go through the crowd and shake hands and talk to the people directly. It's been Trump at his rallies, Larry, up on the dais, now with the teleprompter above the people.
And they're cheering him.
They're switching roles there.
He goes to the bodega and a crowd just develops.
Chick-fil-A in Atlanta.
Chick-fil-A, it's God's chicken or the Lord's chicken. And then he does this thing in Midtown on 48th Street where they're building a big bank building. And by the by, you take a look at those construction workers. I see a lot of blacks. I see a lot of Hispanics.
Absolutely.
Okay. And they're the ones, and they're all chanting for Trump. So you know something's going on, and the Biden thing is just like dead air and dead weight.
Yep. And I'm just one small person, and people run up to me from all places, all spaces, many different faces. Tell him we're for him 100%. Some people say I didn't vote for him before, but things are so bad now. Biden's a real gift to Trump. I think also, ironically, even though he's stuck in the courtroom most days, Larry, he's on message.
Yeah.
And his message, he's projecting strength, resilience, perseverance, these great American qualities. But he's also the guy who's got the better plan on inflation economy. He's not going to hike your tax. He's not going to do 44% cap gains tax. Mm. I think that many of these people predicted when Trump was elected in 2016, he's going to be the king of debt. He should say, I'm the king of growth, and here's how, and here's why.
I love that king of growth. I love that. Are you kidding? You know how good that is?
You can have that.
All right, the king of growth, we're going to go to Mr. Trump on anti-Semitism, where Joe Biden has nothing to say, but listen to Mr. Trump for a moment, please.
I will direct the Department of Justice to pursue federal civil rights cases, will not only have their endowments taxed, but through budget reconciliation, I will advance a measure to have them fined up to the entire amount of their endowment.
People love that.
And, right, so we're going to go after their rich endowments. We could fine them and tax them if need be, because he wants to go to a merit policy, not a DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion policy. He's totally opposed to what the anti-Semites are doing. And the other thing is, he said, we didn't quite get it in this clip, he will enforce civil rights laws against discrimination, which Joe Biden hasn't uttered a peep about, which Merrick Garland hasn't uttered a peep about, and which is disgusting that they haven't uttered a peep about it.
They haven't. Listen, even when they work hard, they work on the issues that don't animate Americans. I love how President Trump injects himself into what I would call the cultural touch points, the cultural zeitgeist. So people are saying, what can Columbia do? What can New York do? What's going on? This is crazy in our college campuses. Also happening in the halls of Congress. We have a lot of anti-Semites there who can't even vote yes on a resolution to condemn Hamas, a squad that doesn't do squat leading the charge. But President Trump standing up and saying, you elect me, and there is a federal role for what's happening on college campuses, and here's what we're going to do. And I think the reason that Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, Merrick Garland don't touch the civil rights enforcement is because they think they own the issue. And just as they thought they owned the issue of illegal immigration and border security 9 years ago when Donald Trump raised it to the elevated to the national consciousness, Larry, they called him all these names, and now it's the number one and number two issue in all the swing states. They miscalculated the wisdom of the voter yet again. They thought if we can attack Trump and his plan on the wall and immigration and border security, we can get more Hispanics. It's backfired. Mm. Hispanics are running towards Donald Trump.
I was
saying. And it's also young people. Redfin in the Hill has an amazing article today about housing costs.
That's right.
The average a young couple, when are they going to buy this first home? That's Biden to blame. That's not Putin. That's not COVID. That's Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the
Democrats.
Mortgage
rates.
It's terrible. They
borrowing
can't, they can't
costs.
Even think about it.
30% credit card costs, and it's now showing up again in the inflation numbers. I mean, I was saying in the last segment, it's maybe tongue-in-cheek, but not. Average folks, average voters, average consumers are smart. They are not stupid. The Bidens think they're stupid. Average people have a wisdom. They know the way the world works. Just from, you know, their curbside level of living or their kitchen table level. It's unbelievable. Trump gets that.
He gets
Trump
that.
Trump gets that. Gets Biden that. Doesn't have a clue about that.
No, I have moderated thousands of focus groups in my career, Larry, and I've been in all 50 states at least once doing a project on the ground. And when you sit with people, you don't insult them. You learn to appreciate them and elevate their opinions. They will tell you their aspirations, frustrations. Let me tell you something. I look down and see somebody's household income, basically the latte and dry cleaning bills annually for some of my friends in New York. That's their household income for the whole year. They have thought this through. They can't afford to make a bad mistake, whether it's in their household budget or for President of the United States. And he's got them.
He does have them. The numbers show he has them. Kellyanne Conway, there's nobody better. Seriously, nobody better.
Thank you.
You told me last night at this birthday party that you were going to show up, and you did.
Here we are.
It was like magic from heaven.
Well, all right. Yes. Showing up is 85%. Here we are.
We love you for it. So, all right, folks, the next one. What's so bad about coal? You know? So we're going to ask President and CEO of the National Mining Association, Rich Nolan, because the Bidens are assaulting coal. We're not going to have any electricity. That's it. No gas, no oil, no coal, no electricity. Guess what that means? No growth. What did you call it? The growth.
King of growth.
King of growth. God, do I love that. And remember, folks, Kudlow is available as a podcast. Episodes available every weekday right after the show on Spotify, on Apple, and FoxBusinessPodcast.com. Three cheers for Kellyanne Conway. We'll be right back.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business.
We view the world the same way.
I'm sure we'll have some disagreements, but you don't want to get her mad.
No, you don't.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business. Invested in you.
Here in Arizona, the most important thing is to find the perfect sunlight, and ours just happened to be our front yard.
Nicole Hood is very proud of her front yard garden, one she says wouldn't be as lush and bountiful without farmyard.
So for about three seasons, I tried to plant on my own with no success, and then a friend told me about farmyard, and Rebecca and Troy came over and just kind of gave me some of the fundamentals on how to plant, how to water, and suddenly everyone in my neighborhood thought I had a green thumb, and I'm going to completely take credit for it.
We are a design, build, and maintain edible garden company. So we build custom raised beds for our clients. We make our own compost. We do irrigation systems.
Rebecca Kidwell, co-owner of Farmyard LLC, says she and her husband, who runs a company with her, give their clients as little or as much assistance as they want or need. Their main interest is to show people how to grow their own food.
So many people come from back east or in the Midwest where they're used to dropping a seed into the soil and it immediately taking. And so out here, so many people are frustrated with growing because they think that they can do the same in our desert soils. That's not the case.
You can grow fruits and vegetables 12 months out of the year in Arizona, according to Kidwell. She's preparing for spring and summer by planting melons and pumpkins and corn that she says thrive in triple-digit weather.
There's something to getting your hands in the soil, grounding, getting dirty, you know, that's kind of fun to do at the end of the day and getting to share. I mean, having a garden in the front yard, we have met so many neighbors. We've kind of become a little stop on people's walks.
I would tell anyone that the opportunity to grow your own food.
All right, we're going to take President Trump speaking outside the courthouse right now. Please listen.
Charlottesville was a little peanut. And it was nothing compared, and the hate wasn't the kind of hate that you have here. This is tremendous hate, and we have a man that can't talk about it because he doesn't understand it. He doesn't understand what's going on with our country. He doesn't understand that all over the world we're being laughed at as a country because of him and his administration. And today we had, I hear, because I was forced to be here, and I'm glad I was because it was a very interesting day in a certain way, but the U.S. Supreme Court had a monumental hearing on immunity and the immunity having to do with presidential immunity. And I think it was made clear, I hope it was made clear, that a president has to have immunity. You don't have a president, or at most you can say it would be a ceremonial president. That's not what the founders had in mind. They're not talking about ceremonial. We want presidents that can get things done and bring people together. So I heard the meeting was quite amazing. Quite amazing, and the justices were on their game. So let's see how that all turns out. But again, I say presidential immunity, very powerful presidential immunity is imperative, or you practically won't have a country anymore. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, there you have it. On the issue of presidential immunity, and let's talk about that key point. Supreme Court held a hearing today. We have Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst, and we have Pam Bondi, former Florida Attorney General and now co-chair of the AFPI Law and Justice Center. Thanks for coming on, both of you. Pam, I know you followed this. You filed an amicus brief, AFPI. What was your read of the hearing on immunity at the Supremes today?
I think it went great for President Trump, Larry. The questions were great by the justices. And I think firmly, I think at really the worst case scenario for President Trump, which is good, is they're going to find that there is immunity and they're going to remand it back to the lower courts to make a determination which instances were immune and which were not, which were official acts and which were him as a private citizen. So I think most likely that's what will happen. Of course, they could rule complete immunity and dismiss the case, or they could rule he has no immunity at all. But given the questions today, I believe that's what's going to happen. And that will take months and months and months of hearings before it actually gets to trial.
Greg Jarrett, give us your read if you agree with Pam Bondi or not. And B, the issue, as I understand it, non-lawyer that I am, Nixon versus Fitzgerald gave presidential immunity in civil cases, but this one is a criminal case. But many people think that the criminal case should be included in presidential immunity, or whatever the term is, the outer limits of immunity, because otherwise presidents are not going to be able to operate as presidents because they may all either go to jail or be in court after they leave the White House, as they're doing to Trump. What's your read, Greg Jarrett?
Yeah, it appears most justices are willing to grant some kind of immunity, Larry. They spoke, as you point out, a great deal about Nixon v. Fitzgerald, a 1982 case that did give presidents immunity from civil lawsuits as long as their actions fall, quote, on the outer perimeter of official duties. So I think it's quite possible the high court will simply extend that immunity protection to criminal prosecutions because the exact same reasoning applies. If there's no immunity whatsoever, my goodness, the chilling effect on presidential decision-making would be severe. So if they go that way, Pam's right, they have to remand the case back to the trial court to decide whether those limited immunity conditions were met by Trump in the J6 case. They could also simply say, you know, there should be some kind of immunity for presidents. We're going to send it back to the lower court to figure it out. We'll give you a little bit of guidance to do that, but either way, the process will be time-consuming, briefs, court hearings, a further appeal. So that makes it impossible that a trial could take place before the election.
All right. So no layup for the special prosecutor. Pam Bondi, you know, Wall Street Journal ran an op-ed piece today, Rifkin, somebody else. Abe Lincoln would have been thrown in jail. Because after all, he suspended habeas corpus during the Civil War. That was really against the law, or Congress didn't approve. Harry Truman took over the steel mills in a labor dispute. I oppose that, but he would have been thrown in jail. And then various presidents, right. I think they mentioned both Bushes and Obama would have been thrown in jail because they might have violated some interpretation of the War Powers Act when they were trying to stop Russia. You see, and that's Trump's logic. You can't be president if right. you have to look over your shoulder about going to jail or courts or whatever after you leave. I mean, that's been his logic from day one, Pam.
Right. Right, Larry, it would be an endless cycle of former presidents being prosecuted. They would just become figureheads. They wouldn't be able to do their job. One of the left's leftist arguments in this was that President Trump could have ordered SEAL Team 6. He could order SEAL Team 6 to assassinate his political opponent. And that was what we wrote in our a friend of the court brief, that of course he can't do that. And Justice Alito used the same language we used in our brief to say, first of all, the president couldn't do that. That would be illegal. And the Navy SEALs wouldn't do that because they would know it's illegal. So that's how ludicrous the left's argument has become. And yeah, I firmly believe President Trump will prevail in this immunity case.
But your key point, Greg, I mean, both of you, I think, are saying the same thing. This is no, you know, there's no 24-second clock here. There's no 10 seconds over the half-court line. This is not going to happen right away. This is going to be a long, drawn-out process. The Supremes, when will the Supremes make a decision to remand if they do that, Greg? Can you take a guess?
Well, judging by what Neil Gorsuch said today, that this is a decision for the ages. Mm. You know, he and the other justices, I think, really appreciate the gravity of what is before them. And I think they are going to take their time. This isn't to them, I don't think this is really about Trump. This is about future presidents for generations. Mm. And I love your point about Lincoln. Yes, he would have been thrown in jail. I think you advised him not to suspend habeas corpus. I think you advised John Adams not to sign the Sedition Act, if I recall correctly.
No, no. I told Harry Truman, don't take over the steel mills. That's not free market capitalism. And he went ahead and did it anyway. But nobody threw him in jail or court. That's the point.
Right. You know what what was important today? Brett Kavanaugh said, what is to stop a creative prosecutor from using a vague statute to criminally charge a president, especially a prosecutor from the opposing party? Well, that pretty much defines all four indictments against Donald Trump, particularly the criminal case that is so absurd being brought by Alvin Bragg right now in Manhattan.
Pam Bondi, got a minute left. First of all, you won't come to New York. You've got to come to New York for this crazy Alvin Bragg trial. But here's the latest. Alvin Bragg and it's got this guy, what's his name, Calendar, who was Calendro is the number three guy in the Justice Department, which I think links him to Biden. But that's a separate subject. But, Pam, what they're saying now is a misdemeanor plus a misdemeanor equals a felony. They've been trying to find a felony here the whole time. They cannot find a federal felony. So they decided two New York State misdemeanors where there's no laws been broken. I mean, they're so obscure, equals a felony. I mean, I think this is just nuttier than Harry Truman taking over the steel mills.
Larry, it is. And you know, it's been very clear that the Department of Justice initially declined to prosecute this case. The Southern District of New York declined to prosecute this case. The statute of limitations has long run on this case. Therefore, they had to join misdemeanors together, turn them into 34 felonies to attempt to even be within the time frame to go after President Trump. And, you know, Jack Smith is trying to push this case. They're all trying to push these cases. Alvin Bragg is trying to push his case. They all want to push these cases because they want him in trial, like he's in trial today. He couldn't be sitting in front of this Supreme Court today. That's where he should have been today, listening to those oral arguments. But he couldn't be there because they're trying to rush everything to have him tied up, which is the ultimate election interference.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Pam Bondi, thank you. Greg Jarrett, thank you ever so much. All right, switching gears, we go from, I don't know, one bad to another. What is so bad about coal, which the Bidens now want to ban altogether, Let's ask Rich Nolan, Vice President and CEO of the National Mining Association. Rich, thanks for coming on. These latest emissions, EPA emissions rules, squeeze coal plants. I mean, the way they're going to take out coal, oil, and natural gas. No new natural gas plants, according to this, too. There ain't going to be any electricity to power any economic growth in this country. I don't get it, and I want to get your take and what you can do about it.
Well, thanks, Larry, and thanks for having me on. Today's announcement by the Biden administration dealt a massive blow to affordable, reliable American mined energy in this country, all at the very time that we have a surging demand in electricity for everything from AI data centers to electric vehicles, the reshoring of the manufacturing. All this is going to require a massive amounts of energy, and we need it all. This is at the very time where electricity inflation has already jumped 28% in the last 3 years. It just makes no sense to shut down one of the optionalities that we have, which is coal-based power in this country. It's still 16% and is the majority power source in over 12 states. Coal is mined in 21 with an average job of $91,000 in payroll, representing over 300,000 jobs in this country, indirect and direct. So the country needs to understand what's happening here. We're getting well-running coal-powered plants shut down by these rules, technology standards that can't be achieved. Everyone knows that, and they're doing the same thing to natural gas now.
You know, the costs here, I mean, you could calculate. They're trying to, I mean, I read some of the EPA numbers. I frankly don't believe a word of it. I once participated in those exercises. Their economists are very biased. But the point is, you've got to have power to grow the economy. That's all I'm saying. If you can make coal cleaner, fine. We already have the cleanest oil in the world. And, of course, we have natural gas that is a clean-burning fuel. And even the European Union has acknowledged that, even though Biden and his greenies will never acknowledge that. They're trying to shut down all of it. What are we going to use? 13th-century Dutch windmills? I mean, that's not going to – I'm not against Dutch windmills, by the way. I just don't think that's going to power a $30 trillion economy.
Yeah, Larry, you're exactly right. And this is all happening at the very time where, you know, renewables are supposed to be rushing onto the market, but they can't get the permits, they can't get the financing, they can't get the materials. Inflation is through the roof. And, you know, what are we doing? We're tearing down our efficient coal plants at the very time when we need them. And we're tearing down our house before we have a new one built.
That's
and
it.
There's just, this is all out of sync. The technology isn't in place. We need to catch our breath, let the adults get back in the room and slow this down.
That's it. The adults are coming. I believe that. The cavalry's coming. They're trying to stop LNG exports. I mean, the cavalry's coming, Rich Nolan. Thank you very much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. Up next, net neutrality is back, and this is going to destroy the Internet. This is government control of the Internet and communications. No profits, no investment, no nothing. And we're going to talk about it with the guy who stopped this nonsense in the Trump administration, my pal, former FCC chair Ajit Pai. I'm Kudlow. Somebody's got to have some power to grow the economy, because the 13th century windmill is not going to be enough.
I try to bring a positive perspective. People may call that naive, but I've got a pretty good track record.
Cavuto Coast to Coast on Fox Business. Invested in you.
Pilots are a breed all their own. They're laser-focused and determined to perform without excuses. You spend any time around the students of WTI and you realize quickly, most never speak of competition directly. Marines are a unit. And they operate as one. And each and every student pilot is gunning to be recognized by their WTI instructors as the very best on the flight line.
So if you're not first, you're last, Ricky Bobby. That is the mentality that makes Marine fire pilots so needed by the Marine Corps, is the desire to get better and do everything right when it counts. and be that guy who comes in first on game day.
I always wanted to sing, but more than sing, I always wanted to entertain.
Do this.
Pat Cohen on the moment she made the leap from part-time singer to full-time entertainer.
Rock me, baby. Rock me all night long.
I said to myself, I said, self.
As we have to do sometimes.
Yes, self. You wanted to come down. The reason you chose New Orleans is because you wanted to come and you wanted to sing. So either do it or get off the pot. You know what I'm saying?
Roll, daddy.
That drive helped her become the dominant but welcoming stage presence known today as Mother Blues.
I started working on Bourbon Street then. And I built myself up to where there were a lot of people that were calling me the Queen of Bourbon Street because I was pulling so many people into the club. I'd fill a house up every single time.
And then Hurricane Katrina came and destroyed her city and her home.
So for you, Katrina was devastating in a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways. It was more than losing your stuff.
But Cohen says the aftermath made her resilient.
Katrina taught me how to be really strong. Every single day, I just cried. When I stopped crying, I stopped crying.
And started fresh.
You don't accomplish anything by feeling sorry for yourself. You have to keep it moving.
But I'm a North Carolina woman.
Cohen did move to North Carolina, where a chance meeting led her to the Music Maker Foundation. It's a nonprofit that supports musicians who perform traditional American blues.
Think about it all night long. Come on, y'all.
Music Maker got Cohen gigging again.
And when things would happen, they were always there.
And things did happen. Cohen lost another home, this time to a fire.
So once again, you went through losing everything you had.
I wanted to cry, but I didn't want to cry. I refused. I just decided I was cried out. Again, Music Maker was there.
You see, the city was too high tech.
You've been very determined to just keep moving forward. How does that infuse your singing?
So I try to do things that are fun. So a lot of my songs are kind of happy.
Happy blues.
Happy blues.
Have nobody treat me bad.
I wrote this song called I Ain't Gonna Have Nobody Treat Me Bad.
Shut your mouth. Get up out of my house.
And I'm sure that somebody can identify with that. You know, we go through a whole lot. You have to be strong.
Fat Mother Blues, y'all. Give it up.
Yes, thank you.
All right, the FCC under Biden wants net neutrality. So they're going to try to bring it back, and it will destroy the Internet, in my judgment. Joining us now to talk about it is former FCC Chair Ajit Pai, who ended net neutrality during the Trump years. Ajit, this is a power play. They're going to try to control everything. They're going to try to control prices. They're going to try to control profits. And it seems to me what's going to happen is there ain't going to be any new investment. And, you know, the Internet was faster under your regime when you were the FCC chair. We're going to lose that advantage, too. What do you think about this? Why are they doing this?
Well, it's a complete waste of time. Unfortunately, though, the net neutrality is now part of the civic religion for certain left-wing activists and politicians. And so the FCC is taking heed of that and trying to come up with new justifications like national security or privacy or things like that to justify this power grab. And it's unfortunate, as Commissioner Carr pointed out today, the Internet is better than ever as a result of the decisions we made in the previous administration. The Internet is faster. It's cheaper in real terms. There's more competition than ever before. There's no problem that the FCC needs to solve here, but it is what it is, unfortunately.
I mean, broadband construction, we have to still think about, you know, things like 5G and selling off assets in space that will allow more of a 5G build-out. Why would you invest all that money if you know the regulatory agency, the FCC, is going to police? They're going to police your profits. They're probably going to ask them to submit blueprints, with DEI specifications on that. I mean, you just imagine the hoops you're going to have to jump through, and therefore nothing's going to get done, and the USA will fall behind.
Larry, you've put your finger on two really important points. The first is, of course, if you're going to innovate and be an entrepreneur in this space and raise the capital, you have to have the certainty that the government is going to come in and completely destroy your business plan. That's at risk when you have the utility-style regulation the FCC is imposing here. But the second point is, you 5G and space in particular, these are areas that were just in their infancy when we got into office, and we enabled those innovations to thrive because we had a light-touch approach. Now you have to wonder, what is the next 5G? What is the next Starlink are going to think when you have this utility-style regulation? It's just going to impede the kind of competition and innovation that benefits consumers.
Ajit, can this get busted up in court, this regulation? Because Congress has not mandated this.
It hasn't. I would expect the Supreme Court, if not a lower court, to block this FCC decision on the basis of the major questions doctrine. The FCC is interpreting a law that's now 90 years old, trying to shoehorn a 21st century technology into a 20th century law framework. And so I think the Supreme Court is going to rightly say, if the decision is going to be made, it has to be made in the first instance by Congress. And that's what they've been applying to other agencies. And the FCC is no different, I would argue.
Internet auctions will be a bust. They'll be a bust. I mean, we raised a lot of money. You had some great auctions. Nobody's going to play if they think they're going to be dictated to. There'll be broadband specifications. There'll be digital equity requirements. You can just see it now. There'll be profits. They'll try to curb profit margins. The whole nine yards. That's what a disaster this is going to be. It's exactly what we didn't want.
Exactly. And especially in an area like telecom, where there are very high upfront capital expenditures, where running the business is very difficult. And especially in a country like America, where you're trying to get these unserved people on the line.
Right.
It's going to be more and more difficult to make that business work.
All right. Ajit Pai, former FCC. Thank you, Ajit. We appreciate it. Net neutrality, down with it.
TikTok is vowing to challenge a newly signed law that forces it to divest from its Chinese parent company ByteDance or face a national ban in the United States. The social media giant's CEO slamming the legislation.
Make no mistake, this is a ban. A ban on TikTok and a ban on you and your voice. We will keep fighting for your rights in the courts.
ByteDance has 9 months to sell the company before the potential ban is issued. Walmart is removing self-checkout counters at two more stores because of skyrocketing retail theft. Now Walmart's in Cleveland, Ohio, and Shrewsbury, Missouri, will remove their self-checkouts. The stores say it's an effort to improve the in-store shopping experience. But shoppers, at least in Cleveland, say it means they will have to wait in line and stay and get paid. PGA Tour players reportedly getting money earned for not leaving for LIV Golf. Tiger Woods reportedly receiving the biggest payout, $100 million, followed by Rory McIlroy at $50 million. Approximately $1 billion will be split between 193 golfers. How much a player receives is based on their career-long achievements. That's business. In New York, CJ Papa, Fox News.
I'm Britt Hume, and I'm Fox News' chief political analyst. I remember covering Bill Clinton's administration. I had misgivings about Bill Clinton, but I will tell you this. He was the most charming man I ever met, and it's important as a journalist to be able to step back from your own personal preferences and judge people fairly, and that is what I trust we will try to do in this election cycle.
They're cute, they're cuddly, they're also at risk of being wiped off the face of the planet. The March of the Emperor Penguins continues, but this time, scientists say it's toward their demise.
The disappearance of any species is a tragedy for the planet. Whether small or large, plant or animal, it doesn't matter.
The latest climate data from the United Nations reveals an alarming number of devastating records were broken in 2021, including
sea level rise, ocean heat, greenhouse gas concentrations, and ocean acidification.
Because the world's oceans reached their warmest and most acidic levels ever recorded last year, researchers estimate Antarctica's emperor penguins could go extinct in the next 30 to 40 years. Without sufficient ice flows, these magnificent birds won't be able to successfully reproduce, as countless young chicks die from exposure to the freezing water as the ice around them cracks.
The ground they rest on, where the colony is developing, breaks, and if the water reaches them, they aren't ready to swim. They don't have their definitive grown-up waterproof feathers, and they die because of the cold.
This crisis is already in motion, but it's getting worse. For 3 years, scientists say one colony of emperor penguins in Antarctica's Weddell Sea has had, quote, almost zero reproductive success because of the weakening ice. Marianne Rafferty, Fox News.
Hello to our friends watching in Costa Rica on Cable Tica. Thank you for choosing Fox. Keep it right here.
In business, you need to stay a step ahead.
Your top stories right now.
They've all gone up. Look at that.
So download the free Fox Business app. Just scan the code on your screen.
You got the NASDAQ moving ahead comfortably.
Put the markets at your fingertips. Get the latest from Wall Street to Washington with the inside investors need.
So here's the good news, folks.
Let's take a quick look at the markets.
The Fox Business app makes it easy to be in the know wherever you go.
Let's get right down to it.
Download the Fox Business app from your app store or scan the QR code on screen now.
You know, the Bidens are just serial regulators, and I don't mean Kellogg's cornflakes. They're stopping broadband. They are stopping power, electricity. They are stopping national security. They are stopping economics.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.